So since we're not perfect, that leads us to our next perspective, and that in order for us to be in the process, we have to consider perspectives, all perspectives. You know, it might be one of the more controversial ideas here in the Inclusive Activism podcast, the idea that you're going to have to like slow down and consider all perspectives. I'm sure some people are going to say, I don't want to consider that perspective. I've considered that perspective many different times, and I assume when I hear that perspective that it's wrong because I've heard the appeal associated with that perspective. Consider and ponder the idea. Not just the idea, but who's this idea coming from? Why are they espousing the benefits of this idea? Who does this benefit, and potentially who does this harm if it does? While at first we might seem as though we're recognizing patterns, like, oh, I've heard this type of person say this type of thing, we need to take some time, slow down, and really consider that specific point of view. I heard it said before that too often that anything that's taken as a given or as completely understood has the most embedded hegemonic thinking in it, which means that if everyone agrees on something, then no new thing can come from that thing. And if it's all considered a given or universally true, no new opportunity of change can come from that thing because it's all agreed upon. So doing things the way they've always been done is the best way to never have anything new, exciting, or innovative happen. It's only in a space of conflict or non-agreement where we can come up with something new and something special can be seeded and then grown. So like, take some time, look at the perspective, where is it coming from, who benefits, is there good that can come out of this point of view? We want to try to salvage the good and move forward. Because no idea is all bad and no idea is all good. They're just ideas. And we need to really like evaluate those things and try to understand them as much as possible. The next idea is one of my favorites. It's the idea that we can find value in one thing while it not diminishing another thing. So this is one of the things that I'd seen at work. And there was a sign that said, "Girls rock." And someone's like, "Well, what does that mean?" And I was like, "Well, I think it means the girls rock." And they were like, "Well, what does it mean about guys?" And I'm like, "Nothing, because it didn't say anything about guys. It just says girls rock. It doesn't say anything about guys at all. Like, why do we have to think that just because it says girls rock, that it's also saying something about men or anybody that's not girls? It's not saying anything like that at all. I can just agree. I mean, girls do rock. I like having girls around. I think it's great that girls exist. Like, there's nothing wrong with saying girls rock because it doesn't mean anything about anybody else specifically. See, saying one thing has value in it doesn't say anything else about anything else and its relation to value in it. Let's not think that finding value in something that hasn't had value in it before diminishes the value of another thing that had always been considered to be valuable in the first place. The problem is that in that seeing something new and understanding the value that has always existed in something can feel like you no longer have the same value or sense in value in what had always been considered valuable. But that's not the case. While it can feel that way, it's not true. It's not truth. This thing is good. It doesn't mean this thing is bad. Like, that's a dualistic way of thinking. We need to see and understand the true value of all ideas and concepts, and then try to find a way to extract as much value as possible from the concept, from the idea, from the opportunity. As it stands now, we overvalue certain things that has always been considered valuable, but we undervalue things which we haven't even explored to find the value in because it's always thought as less than valuable. So, for example, diamonds are considered valuable. Now, are diamonds rare? Not exactly. There's lots of diamonds. Diamonds have been created to be seen as valuable because of monopoly on people that hold diamonds. Not a lot of people have diamonds, have access to the wealth of diamonds. And because they're marketed well, because they manage supply, there's an image of scarcity or value created. When you really look at it, like, there's tons of diamonds out there, and they're really not that rare stones at all. And especially with the way that we go about trying to get diamonds out of the earth and the people that we hurt and oppress while we're getting diamonds, means that diamonds shouldn't have value at all. Like, the amount of pain and suffering that comes from a diamond should lower its value if we are really looking at it in actuality. And finding something like a ruby, a pearl, an emerald, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a gemologist and I'm not aware of the other processes that it takes to get these rare gems out of the earth. May mean that those things have more value, or maybe we can see something else, like a seed, as having like true value versus like a piece of coal from the earth. So, you know, looking at value, understanding value, and trying to revalue things in a way that sees the potential in them might be a better way to look at stuff. The next value that we're going to look at is that as being an inclusive activist means that we need to be associated with action. We have to live as though we know something. Otherwise, we don't really know anything at all. To know something and not to act as though that thing is true is to not know. Does that make sense? You can't just know something. You have to live as though you know and believe it, right? Like, I need to know and believe that I can breathe air. If I don't act as though I believe I can breathe air, then I won't. And I'll try not to. And I'll try to find another way to get those things that I need specifically. Having like a mental, intellectual head knowledge about something, but then not acting on the knowledge and treating it as true means you don't really know. You have a theoretical understanding of something, but you don't do that thing. So in your head, you can have a theoretical knowledge of time management techniques, but you don't use them. They're not really real to you because you don't use them. Like, if you use them and found a way to make these theoretical time management techniques effective for you, then you could live as though that thing is true. But because you don't use them, you live as though they're not true because you don't believe in them and you don't practice them. Do you know them? Or do you know of them? Do you like understand that there's a systemic ism or an institutionalized ism? But if you don't do anything different, you like know of ism, but don't live in a way that acknowledges the truth that ism exists. That you're not trying to fight against this ism that exists to try to come to this greater me is greater than we thing. We have to have action associated with knowledge, and you have to live as though something's true. There must be evidence of your anti-ism work. Rallies, voting, protest, advocacy, using your privilege on the behalf of the oppressed. There has to be action associated with your knowledge. Otherwise, you know something, but you don't live in a way as though it's true. One of the next things that we really hold dear is we're not really big fans of being politically correct, which I may surprise a lot of folks, but let me kind of get into that and talk about it. I'm sure we'll have a podcast on politically correctness specifically in the future too. We are not about trying to sound respectful in front of certain people. We're not just trying to look good in front of other people. We want to actually actively be respectful of all people. But it doesn't mean we are unwilling to have difficult or uncomfortable or even really unpopular conversations. We're willing to do that because that's what it takes to create a new understanding. We just don't want to avoid words without understanding why they hurt and they don't allow for us to become the bigger we together. We have to find a way to be real and create real understandings from these difficult conversations. For example, I don't know that there really is such a thing as a safe space that exists in the world. I think we gotta change the idea that like we can expect safeness in spaces to we need to instead be brave in spaces. We need to share our vulnerability about words and how words hurt and marginalize us. And what do they do to us? Not just gloss over and be like, don't say that. I don't know that don't say that has changed anyone's heart to date. Rather, we need to actively live in brave spaces where we're willing to have these incredibly crucial conversations that need to be had. Otherwise, as inclusive activists, we're just going to engage in being PC police. PC police and trying to get people just not to say words and not helping to understand, to create a new understanding of this language and how that hurts and oppresses certain folks, which also makes us less than the best we could possibly be, is incredibly important. We need to change hearts and minds. We need to be active in creating a space where people are seen and felt as though they are valued and seen as important. I'm not just trying to not say certain words in front of you so I don't look bad. I'm trying to change the way I think to create spaces where I can be my best self, where I allow you to be your best self. And being politically correct does not allow for that opportunity. I honestly want to change the way I talk. I want you to talk to me about the way that I talk. I want you to have a conversation with me about the way you talk. And I want us to interact. I want us to understand each other. I want you to respect me, and I want to give respect to you so we can show up and know we're valued, to have all pieces of our identity really appreciated for all parts of what they can be, and so we can live and work as our best selves. I mean, damn, if that's not leadership, right? So with that stated, another specific position on the Inclusive Activism podcast is that we are not anti-white, we are not anti-male, and we are not anti-rich. In no way at all, that is not what we're here for specifically. We are here to be inclusive and to make sure that all people are welcome here. For example, I am a male. I like being male. I don't apologize for my maleness, and I don't apologize for my masculinity. Now, if I have toxic masculinity, or if my maleness or my performance of masculinity is adding to patriarchy, then I want to undo that. But I don't need to feel sorry for who I was born to be. I do at times need to apologize for my sexism, but that's not the same thing as me apologizing for being male. See, like, the way I was born, I happen to be cisgendered. I happen to be heterosexual. I happen to be pretty masculine, and I identify as male. Now, I don't really need to go around and beat my chest with pride about being those things, because those things currently are, if we're going to be honest, they're overvalued in society today. So why would I take value in being an overvalued identity? That doesn't make any sense. I wouldn't apologize for being that thing, but I wouldn't be proud at being overvalued, because it doesn't make any sense. Another example is my partner's white. There's a lot of people in my life who are white that I love. And these amazing white people in my life are lovers of diversity. They're amazing allies. And we can't do this change in becoming this great we without them. In fact, I think as lovers of diversity, we've been really bad at articulating why an inclusive vision inherently needs to have white people in it. We need to talk about that white people are a part of this, that they fit in, that they're diverse people too, and they're part of the big we, and we need them there. I don't think those of us that are inclusive activists have really spoken enough about the need for white allies and for white people that are still diverse people that are allies with their whiteness for others. And though I am not rich in America, I am still a very, very wealthy person when you look at things globally. I am rich when you look globally. I don't know that being rich is wrong necessarily. More so, I have a responsibility with my middle classness and my richness as an American to make a difference for people that really don't have resources. There's a responsibility that comes with my privilege of richness. I'm solidly middle class, which actually means in America I'm doing really, really well. And unless I use my funds, my agency, my knowledge to get out there and do something about equity specifically, then I'm not doing something that actually creates the we being greater than me. That's really important. So we're not anti-male, we're not anti-white, we're not anti-rich. More so, we would want to acknowledge that people have these identities and they're really important about creating the changes that we need to become the great we. There'll be more than we could ever had hope for otherwise. Another huge tenet for us is specifically that we need to acknowledge that 16% of us are traditionalists, and we're not going to change those folks' minds. These folks, according to Marilyn Loden, are not going to change unless they are made to change. As inclusive activists, we cannot waste time on the 16%, but we must be aware that they exist. According to the Loden model of diversity change, 2.5 of us are innovators. These are the people with the big ideas that get stuff going. But these innovators are not going to be the people that get sweeping change to happen. We need that next group to do that. That's the 13.5%. That's the change agents. These change agents see the great idea put forward by the innovator and help that innovator get this idea moving forward and try to get some traction underneath that idea. The next part of the population that we need to look at would be the 34% of us who are pragmatists. They're not going to be on board quite as early as the change agents, but they do see the opportunity with something that's being onboarded. They're like that first big wave of people that see the new idea that's like really start getting some traction. Now the next group are the pragmatists. They really need some solid convincing that this is not a passing fad in order to get on board. They don't want to be on board too soon. They're willing to adopt something, but they really need to be proven like why this is important and how this needs to be incorporated in what they do. But there is 16% of us who will never want to change, and we don't want to concentrate our focus or our efforts on these people because they're not going to be an area of opportunity. Everyone else, the innovator, the change agents, the skeptics, the pragmatists, those folks are going to be where we focus on specifically because those are where the opportunity of movement is. Now, here's what's complicated. You and I are different identities on that chain scale based on what the concept is. I might be an innovator in one space, but I might be a traditionalist in another. We need to recognize that we occupy different spaces with this diversity of change based on the concept and idea. And understand that just because I might be a pragmatist here doesn't mean I can't be a change agent there. We have to notice that we are really deep, complex people. And just because these boxes of where people might fit on an idea or notion doesn't mean that's where they'll always be. And we also need to understand we won't always be the same or in the same space based on the change and the diversity concept that we are being connected to or what we're being offered. We're going to exist in different spaces, and we may need a very simple appeal in one place and a very complex appeal in another. Everyone else is exactly the same too. Someone might be a change agent here, but you bring a completely different topic and then they become a pragmatist. We need to be aware of the fact and try to see and diagnose where they might be with stuff in order to craft the message for sustainable, positive social change to actually happen. But we do recognize in the world that 16% of the people are traditionalists and they're never going to change their mind. Don't waste your time with them. Find another person that's the opportunity if that's your area of change that you're looking at. Go with and move with the opportunity and see how you can make the change in a positive way. All right, we're rolling through. So next up is the idea that we are nonviolent in our approach to change. What's big here is we don't see people as evil. In fact, we don't really try to work on binaries. Remember when I was talking about dualism? We're not going to be big fans of dualism. One of the things that I'm actually working on this year is I'm trying to work on being non-dualistic and seeing things as having various shades of gray. So I'm trying to incorporate meditation. I'm trying to learn some more about Buddhist thought and Buddhist practice because they don't think in the same binary way as my Christian worldview has shaped. And I need to be able to think in more nuanced and complex ways to be the best me to create the most change I possibly can. So when we're attacking things, we attack ideas. We don't attack the people that hold the ideas. Every one of us is socialized into the world that we live in. We were taught the things that we know. I don't believe that anyone is born as an active ist. I think we are taught to be ist by media, by family, by the world that we live in. And by taking a nonviolent approach with people who happen to hold ist tendencies, we can remove the istness from them because it's not their fault that they were taught to see things that way. It's different if you learn something, but then you still choose to do the bad thing. But when you do learn differently, the hope is that we help people rise above and keep a continual hope and optimist and an optimism that they'll become their best selves, that they'll see the opportunity of we is greater than me, that they will want to join us because we are hoping that they will rise to the occasion of being their best selves. We want to see the best in people. And you'd be surprised how often people would like to prove you right when you see the best in them. When you see the worst in them, they'll just show you the worst in them because the worst they're going to do is just prove you right. when you see the best in people and see the opportunity in folks, this makes them want to change. And two, you gotta remember, somebody was nonviolent in their approach with you because you didn't know everything you know now, and you're still in the process of learning. So we need to focus on system when it comes to cures, not symptoms. Symptoms cover problems. We want to cure problems. We want to help make a problem be eliminated once and for all, and not just cover a problem that lets it grow and stay part of the issue. I think too often, specifically when we're talking about issues related to diversity and inclusion, we're trying to cover problems instead of fix systemic issues and come up with cures. Not cover symptoms, cure problems. We'll do another podcast on nonviolence specifically as we move forward. So we only got two more concepts that we're going to be looking at. And the next one is, you will find that I specifically, as your host, am a big fan of the notion of positive masculinity. I think all too often notions of masculinity are connected with ideas of toxic masculinity, which are a form of in-group conformity, which are really built to be there to try to keep men on top. And men will police men into acting this specific, like, more limited way because of the fact that we are unconsciously taught, because we are unconsciously taught to act in a way that keeps male power on top and sublimates everything but male masculinity as valued. I think what we're trying to do is not live in a world where we're always trying to prove our manhood over and over again without end. I think masculinity can be positive, can be an affirming force in the world, but we need to show that. We need to practice this form of positive masculinity that is related with notions of empoweredness and actively validates other non-male identities. So you'll hear me talk about that quite a bit, because I think this is a version of me working with my privilege, where I'm trying to find a way to act and be in the world that is affirming to other people. There'll be quite a bit more about positive masculinity as I'm planning a YouTube series in the future about that. So I will tell you all about that so you can stay connected with it. And lastly, so all this stuff is about the we and how we connect with the we and how we better do the we. Now we get back down to the me. This, I do believe, is a form of personal leadership. And the purpose of this podcast is to find how doing these things make you be a better person. Because leadership is really popular right now, but I don't know that anyone's looked as diversity and inclusion and creating systemic solutions to problems is a way of being personally a better person. So that's the whole point of us being here at the Inclusive Activism Podcast, is how do we understand and articulate this iron sharpens iron version of us becoming a better person? We believe that, like, focusing on systems and trying to make the world a better place is a process. And it's the way in which we choose to hone our own form of personal leadership and to become our best persons. We're gonna be in the process. We're going to be wrong quite a bit, and I'm sure you're going to call in and correct me, and I'm going to get impatient with that because that's part of the deal, but I'm going to do my best to embrace that, to come to a better sense of how I can do this better for us. When I was thinking about this Inclusive Activism Podcast, I wanted to articulate how, specifically, working on reducing systemicism is a form of personal leadership. It will be something that makes you a better person. You'll become aware of things that you didn't understand before. You'll live in a way that's more equitable for people. You'll find a way to use your privilege to work on those that are oppressed, so you can give up your privilege, so we can be truly in an equitable society. You will learn how to think differently. I think that's one of the best things that I get out of this, is I think laterally better, because I don't see traditional views to traditional solutions to problems, because I'm used to thinking and seeing the world in a different way. And by looking and seeing the world in a different way and always being in my process, by being nonviolent in my approach, by seeing where traditionalists are part of us, but they're not the only thing that exists with us, like, I've become someone that sees things differently. You know, when I am making sure to practice a non-anti-white, a non-anti-male, a non-anti-rich standpoint in my diversity and inclusion stuff, people see me differently because they believe that I'm here for them too. When I'm not politically correct, when I'm willing to be brave, when I'm willing to be vulnerable, when I'm trying to articulate things, is huge. When I know that I need to be out there when I know I need to be active and showing what I believe to be true and acting as though it is urgent and that this is something that needs attention. I become a better person. When I can find value in one thing and understand it doesn't diminish another thing, it allows me to see the most value in all things rather than overvaluing one thing that's traditionally always been valued. While being honest about that, I'm in my process that I have to consider perspectives, that I'm looking for value and understanding and ways to create us better, that I'm gonna make mistakes, that I am imperfect. I'm gonna try to leave some of my stutterings in here so you know that I'm imperfect. When I'm always in the process of changing my language to create more inclusive thought is important. That understanding that language communicates and shapes and creates and reproduces reality is really important. And two, when I find other ways to make this bigger we, when I connect to the bigger we, when I add more people to the bigger we, and when I become a better me for the bigger we, this is a lifestyle choice. This is a way to live that I think makes you a happier person. And that's the point of the Inclusive Activism Podcast, is we're trying to have this place be a repository of ideas, a place where we talk about concepts, where we go back and forth on things and we learn and grow and we get better. Because we need to be the strongest links in the chain for everyone else. Because this is really important. There's so many problems out there, and I think we really need to find a way to think and do things differently and find a way to correctly articulate the true value of doing things in this way, in a new way. And that's what I'm hoping to undertake. With that, we will call it the end of the Orientation Podcast, so that is my time. Being that this is one of the first 6 podcasts I'm going to release, there's no callers yet, but I am hoping that you'll call in and talk about some of these values. So if this made you think about something, or you'd like me to articulate something in a different way, or you have a question about something, or you have a critique, I'm not going to be surprised to hear critiques, you can give me a call at the Inclusive Activism Podcast by calling 860-576-9393. Again, you can get a hold of Rowdy at the Inclusive Activism Podcast at 860-576-9393. Please help me to make this a community, communal effort. I need a we to make this something awesome. If this is just me, we know how that's going to go, right? It's going to be less than we. So I need the we to make this something really dynamic. Talk back. Ask me questions. Give me scenarios about how to react to different situations, or tell me what you think about something, or ask me to elaborate something on the future. I'd be more than happy to do that. I'll give you my first take response on how to deal or work with a problem or issue where you're working against ism, or how to correct friends or family. But this interaction is going to be that something that makes this podcast something really special. And lastly, if you're interested in booking me and bringing the power of inclusive activism to your organization, you can always do so at rowdy.duncan@cox.net. That's rowdy.duncan@cox.net. And you can learn more about this organization, the people that do this type of work, the folks that are working to try to create a more inclusive future at www.inclusiveactivism.com. That's www.inclusiveactivism.com. I'll be blogging there. This is where the podcast will be hosted. That's where the YouTube series will exist. So if you're interested in learning more about what's this effort, what we're trying to do, because this is a form of work for me, but it's also a movement. And this is going to be how to stay tuned with this. And hopefully we can all help each other become our best selves while still making a space for everyone else to really connect and belong. And with that, that's my time. This is Rowdy. I'm signing off. I'll be excited to hear from you, hopefully in the future, being that this finishes my first 6 original podcasts. So I'll still have a few more podcasts without some of that live interaction, but I'm looking forward to hearing from whoever is willing to be my audience. Because that will be the thing that makes this something special, is the dialogue, is the opportunity of talking, of sharing, and seeing how all that stuff pans out. With that, be well.